Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 941. Who is Tulsi Gabbard? Part 1. This is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2017. Well, it is a new year. I might engage in the ritual Happy New Year. I've heard many people lamenting 2016 and saying, boy, I'll be glad when this year is over. It has been a terrible year, an assessment I would agree with completely. However, I suspect that 2017 and succeeding years are going to be far worse as not only Americans, but people around the world are treated to what Donald Trump is going to be offering. In this program, I am once again going to make a perhaps unsuccessful attempt at streamlining and making more rhetorically accessible the information I'm presenting here. So I will be doing perhaps less reading of text from the appropriately annotated sources. I cannot stress strongly enough that listeners should use the website, use the long article-length written descriptions for the program, which often contain information not contained in the original broadcast itself due to the limitations of time, because the strong point of my work, one of the strong points, is its reliance on documentation, open source documentation. This rigorous scholarship is also hierarchical. It basically stems or derives all the way back, derives from the very beginning of the programs that I did. I have been on the air since the fall of 1979. However, as is so often the case, the strong points of this program and the research I've done and the weak points are part of the same configurations. This is also an admittedly pedantic format. I think if the Guinness Book of World Records had a record for on-air broadcast pedantry, I would hold that one hands down. The problem is that with our increasingly inadequate political, scientific, and journalistic landscape, with so much fake news and so much ignorance and stupidity abounding, it is, I think, essential to be able to document what one says from credible journalistic sources. Hence, my reliance on the printed word and the synthesis of printed media and broadcast media. The advent of the internet has made that all the more possible. I also want to include a brief note on the website itself. There are many comments that are perhaps sincerely ignorant, some undoubtedly posted by trolls. If a comment is such that it is apparent that the person really has not even attempted to use the lavish documentation I have made available and have done, basically that I've made available, and the long printed descriptions that I have done on my own time and like the program itself for no pay, I probably will not publish those comments. My work stems back to the fall of 1979 in the pre-internet era, and I treat comments on my blog on the SpitfireList.com website very much like editors' letters to the editor for a newspaper. If I don't think they're worthwhile, I will not publish it. Once in a while, I will publish something that is simply complimentary and not particularly substantive, and once in a while, something mildly humorous. If I think someone is sincerely ignorant, and if the answering of that question would prove illuminating to other users of the website and or other listeners to the program, I may go ahead and respond to it. But simply put, I don't have time for back and forth. I work a day job to support myself that limits my time. It also, however, frees me up from having to answer to an editor or an executive producer or corporate sponsors, and that's one of the things that frees me up to do what I do. But if someone posts a comment that could be easily answered if they had used the descriptions or if they have really listened carefully to a program, I probably will not publish that, so be advised. Now, there is an awful lot going on, and one of the things, of course, we're seeing a remarkable development, a lot of them really, where we're having as far right a Republican president-elect as possible, Donald Trump, warring openly with the U.S. intelligence apparatus. We are seeing something of a neo-McCarthyism, with Russia having been fingered as a partisan player in the U.S. elections on behalf of Donald Trump, something I don't buy at all. I don't doubt that perhaps Putin and others would like to see an administration that is not as overtly hostile as Obama has been. Obama himself having been manipulated, I think, much like Hillary Clinton, by the intelligence services. One of the reasons one studies history is to understand the present. And when one studies, for example, the assassination of JFK, his brother Robert, and Martin Luther King, and other developments, it is very apparent that our intelligence services and national security establishment a long time ago began engaging in just the sort of covert action, often violent covert action, here at home to control the political landscape in America, as they have so many times overseas. And I've done a lot of work on the high-profile hacks. I don't buy that either. I don't think it was Russia. I think it was if indeed the DNC files that were downloaded by the fascist WikiLeaks, and yes, WikiLeaks is a fascist institution, and I have documented that at great length in numerous broadcasts, for the record, 932 among others, 924, 925, 724, 725, 732, 745, 755, 917, and others. The documentation on the DNC hacks, I think, did not come from Russia. It may not have come from a hack at all. A guy named Craig Murray, who a former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, is alleging that he got the information and then gave it to WikiLeaks, and he got it from a dissatisfied Democratic National Committee insider. I can't say if that is true or not. There does appear to have been a hack of the DNC database and other hacks. Those hacks, however, I don't believe were performed by Russia. One of the things that is really very threatening about online culture and about hacking is that it is very easy for a skilled hacker to mask his or hers or their activities and make it look like it was somebody else. People may have either read the novels by Stieg Larsson, girl who played with fire, the girl who kicked the hornet's nest, and other things, the other novels. Lisbeth Salander, the lead character in those, is a Swedish hacker, and she does a lot of things, making it appear that the things she was doing were coming from someplace else. That is, in fact, accurate. And a skilled hacker can do that. I would take anything anyone associated with WikiLeaks says with a generous grain of salt. I cannot say if Craig Murray is telling the truth when he says that he got the information to WikiLeaks from a dissatisfied DNC insider, but I certainly hold that possibility open. That is something of a bridge to the discussion of a woman named Tulsi, that's T-U-L-S-I, Gabbard, G-A-B-B-A-R-D. Tulsi Gabbard is a U.S. Congresswoman from Hawaii. She was the deputy chair, the number two person in the Democratic National Committee behind the recently resigned Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She resigned in February of last year. She resigned from that position so she could campaign for Bernie Sanders. I would note, too, that she was one of the people who put Bernie Sanders' name in contention, basically nominated him for president at the Democratic National Convention. She is also being floated as the House Minority Leader. She continues to be a Bernie Sanders supporter. She also, however, is someone viewed with great favor by the right, including fascist elements like the alt-right. Stephen Bannon, the alt-right top advisor to Donald Trump, likes Tulsi Gabbard a lot. She was interviewed by Donald Trump for a possible cabinet position. What we're going to be doing in this program is examining Tulsi Gabbard, examining the possibility that she may, in fact, be a fascist mole within the Democratic Party and possibly a mind control job. Mind control is a technology that is now the better part of 100 years old. It was developed in the late 40s and early 1950s and on up into the 60s by the CIA, among other American institutions, networking with Third Reich alumni. The person overseeing the mind control programs was Richard Helms, who later became head of the CIA. Most of the files on that have been destroyed. AFA programs 5 through 7 deal with mind control, and number 7 and other miscellaneous archive shows deal with mind control cults.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Tulsi Gabbard is an interesting individual. She is, again, from Hawaii. I described her incorrectly as an Indian American. She actually is of Samoan American ancestry. She also is the first Hindu in Congress, although when describing her as Hindu, that is, in a sense, somewhat misleading in terms of what most people would associate with Hindu. She's not really a Hindu in the way that most people would take that. She is an affiliate, a devotee of an offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult. More about that. We're going to begin, however, by taking a look at some of her contradictory positions vis-a-vis Islam, Muslims, and also wars of intervention and the military in general. Then we're going to examine her networking with Narendra Modi, the BJP, and the RSS, the Hindu Nationalist slash fascist government, for which Narendra Modi's BJP is a political cat's paw. All of Narendra Modi's key cabinet appointments have come from the RSS. Now, again, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that most of the, I'm going to make an attempt to not read in as great at length to the extent that I have in the past. Something about the anti-Muslim politics of Tulsi Gabbard is featured in an alternate article from February 22nd of 2015. Again, from alternate.org. This is by Zaid, Z-A-I-D, Jilani, J-I-L-A-N-I. The curious Islamophobic politics of then Congress member Tulsi Gabbard. And synopsizing here, what the writer talks about, and it's quite well documented, is that Tulsi Gabbard has been very critical of President Obama for not labeling ISIS as an Islamic group. She basically is saying that ISIS is Islamic and its extremist positions stem directly from the fact that Islam is an extremist religion. Nowhere in anything I have found about Tulsi Gabbard has she really hit the nail on the head saying, and indeed she's hardly alone in this regard, in a political landscape, that, and particularly in the so-called progressive sector that is impaled on identity politics, is generally either Islam thumbs up or Islam thumbs down, or it's Muslims thumbs up or Muslims thumbs down. That is the wrong context. The various terrorist groups, including ISIS, appear to be offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. That is an Islamic fascist organization that was aligned with the Axis in World War II and that jumped to Western intelligence, the CIA in particular. It was the parent organization of the Afghan Mujahideen, the Al-Qaeda group that grew out of that. Hamas is one of the Palestinian branches of the Muslim Brotherhood, along with the competing Palestinian Islamic Jihad. The founder of ISIS was a former, unquote, Muslim Brotherhood member. However, the point of this piece, and it's well documented, is that Tulsi Gabbard has been very critical of Barack Obama for not basically pinning ISIS as an Islamic group. Obama is no doubt trying to remain politically correct and not tar all Muslims with the terrorist brush. That is altogether understandable. I would note, and we're going to come back to this at considerable length, that one of the things that the Muslim Brotherhood has been very, very adept at doing is infiltrating the U.S. and basically co-opting the Muslim community, or at the very least, successfully positioning itself, would be a better way of putting it, as the face of and the spokes bodies for the coin a term for the American Islamic or Muslim community. The Council on American Islamic Relations, for example, which has a reputation sort of a Muslim iteration of the NAACP, is an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, basically a Muslim Brotherhood front organization. Many other of the Muslim organizations in the U.S. are Muslim Brotherhood front groups themselves. I want to note that many of the people who network with these groups and individuals belonging to them may very well, in fact, I suspect, do not understand that these are Muslim Brotherhood front organizations. So the fact that we're going to talk about Keith Ellison in a minute, the fact that many American Muslims may network with Muslim Brotherhood front organizations does not mean that they are in and of themselves extremist necessarily. However, it is worth noting that, again, the Muslim Brotherhood has successfully positioned itself as the public facade, the public voice of the American Muslim community. But note, the contradictions that we're going to lay out about Tulsi Gabbard's position vis-a-vis Muslims. Again, she was very critical of Barack Obama because of his stance on ISIS. She also, Tulsi Gabbard, was, again, the number two person in the Democratic National Committee. She was the deputy chairwoman or chairperson of the Democratic National Committee, but she resigned in February of 2016 to campaign for Bernie Sanders. She was an opponent of Hillary Clinton. In USA Today of August 4th of 2016, an article by Nicole Gaudiano, G-A-U-D-I-A-N-O, Tulsi Gabbard, a surrogate for Bernie Sanders to vote for Hillary Clinton. The thrust of this article is that Tulsi Gabbard announced publicly that she would vote for Hillary Clinton. She, however, was a supporter of Bernie Sanders and had said in the video, quote, America that could elect a president who will lead us into more interventionist wars of regime change, or we can elect a president who will usher in a new era of peace and prosperity. She is supportive, or has been supportive, of Bernie Sanders because of his opposition to wars of regime change. That is a stance that I am sympathetic to. I feel the same way. I would also note, however, that Bernie Sanders is inconsistent in that regard. He was very supportive of the American military bombing campaign in Kosovo in the 1990s. He did vote against the Iraq War in the early part of this century. He was supportive of the brutal economic sanctions against Iraq under Bill Clinton that visited some lethal hardships on the Iraqi population. I would also note that Tulsi Gabbard, like Bernie Sanders, has endorsed Keith Ellison, an African-American Muslim congressperson from Michigan, to be the chairperson of the Democratic Party. She said that in a tweet, and it is quite well documented. One of the things that's interesting, again, this is Tulsi Gabbard, who is critical of Obama because of his stance on ISIS, she wants to link ISIS to Islam, and is critical of Obama and well to the right of Obama in that regard. Tulsi Gabbard has become something of a darling of right-wing media. She then supports Bernie Sanders because he does not favor wars of intervention. Gabbard herself is a veteran. She joined the Hawaii National Guard and commanded a hospital unit and served two tours in Iraq in that regard. And while she certainly would have witnessed some very bloody events and some people in advanced states of suffering and people who died, even though in counterinsurgency wars such as the one in Iraq, units like hospital units, even though they are not on the front lines, she was not out walking combat patrols in enemy territory looking for mines or IEDs or snipers. Often, units that were in the rear echelon will come under attack. However, Vietnam veterans or, for example, Army or Marine combat veterans who were in the front lines and walking those patrols and getting ambushed and sniped might very well refer to Tulsi Gabbard, who touts her military experience as a major part of her political cachet. They would refer to her as what is known in vulgar military slang as a REMF, that is R-E-M-F. It is an acronym. The R stands for rear, the E stands for echelon, and I'm sure you can figure out what the MF stands for. So to someone that had, for example, served with the Marines in Helmand Province in Afghanistan, or who had fought with the 3-5 Marines in Fallujah in Iraq, Tulsi Gabbard would be a REMF. And again, I think it's good that she served in the Hawaiian National Guard. She uses her veteran experience as part of her political cachet. With regard to Keith Ellison, again supported by Bernie Sanders and by Tulsi Gabbard to be head of the DNC, from the Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch of November 13th of 2016, featured the madness of the Democratic Party. Keith Ellison as the head of DNC. I'm not going to read this at length. What it notes is that Keith Ellison has been networking with various Muslim Brotherhood organizations, front organizations, for much of his political career. And again, he may very well, Ellison that is, may very well not know that these are Muslim Brotherhood front organizations. I think that for the Democratic Party to have an African-American Muslim as the face of the party would be for that party to play right into the hands of the likes of Donald Trump, Stephen Bannon, and the, quote, alt-right. In fact, I think they would be doing the boogie if, in fact, he does. If, in fact, the Democratic Party does nominate Keith Ellison, they can kiss their you-know-whats goodbye in future elections. Ours is not a culture of ideas and concepts, but of images and sensations. We are not, to put it mildly, a very intellectual society, and in a society that is dominated by ethnicity, by identity politics, to have an African-American Muslim, whatever his positive qualities may be, as the face of the party, would be for the Democratic Party to kiss the red states goodbye. And again, Keith Ellison, as documented, and the various instances of this are in the written description that will be published for the record 941. He is heavily networked and has been heavily networked for years with Muslim Brotherhood front organizations in the U.S. And again, Ellison may not know these are Muslim Brotherhood front organizations, but I'll guarantee you in campaigns to come, if in fact the Democrats clasp the ASP to their bosom and nominate an African-American or appoint an African-American Muslim as the face of the Democratic Party, you're going to be hearing about just that. I can't imagine anything that Donald Trump or Stephen Bannon and their ilk would like better. I would also note that, as documented in Talking Points memo of December 8th of 2016, something disturbing about Tulsi Gabbard by Josh Marshall. She has lambasted critics of Donald Trump's appointments of recently retired generals to key positions. James Mattis nominated to be defense secretary, and you have John Kelly as the nominee to head up the Department of Homeland Security. And in addition to Kelly and Mattis, former Army General Michael Flynn has been appointed as National Security Advisor. And the critics of these appointments have pointed out that these are recently retired generals, and there is a long tradition. In fact, it is against political precedent in this country to have recently retired veterans serving in key political positions. This is not to say that former generals could not serve in political positions, but there is a tradition against recently retired generals serving in that capacity, and the strictures against that would have to be waived in the case of Mattis and Kelly and Flynn. However, Tulsi Gabbard has basically blasted the critics of that situation, saying, quote, "Yet people are criticizing them and discriminating against them, saying just because you served as a general previously, you are disqualified from serving in a high position of leadership in our government. These people arguably have put far more on the line and are far more deeply personally committed to upholding and protecting our democracy than their critics. That is neither true nor fair." The critics are not saying that it is bad to have generals per se in political positions, but recently retired generals is the problem. And also there is the question of civilian control of the military. It's not that people are attacking them because they served in the military. That's what Tulsi Gabbard is saying. It is because they are recent retirees. And Josh Marshall makes that point at great length.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now again, whereas Tulsi Gabbard is attacking Barack Obama because of his unwillingness to be anti-Muslim in connection with ISIS or make anti-Islamic statements in connection with ISIS, whereas she then turns around and is supportive of Bernie Sanders because of his unwillingness to engage in wars of regime change, a stance I support, by the way. She then turns around and is ripping those who are critical, rightly so, of having recently retired generals in key positions in the Trump administration. She then turns around and endorses an African-American Muslim heavily networked with Muslim Brotherhood front organizations as head of the DNC. These are contradictory stances, and they also are contradictory of her networking with Narendra Modi, with the RSS, and her support for their anti-Muslim stances. Now, reviewing information that we have spoken about in past broadcasts, I'm not going to read the articles, excerpts are in the written description for the show. The New York Times of November 27th of 2016, World, a Potential Conflict for a Developer President, by Richard C. Paddock, Eric Lipton, Ellen Berry, Rod Nordland, Danny Hakim, and Simon Romero, again from the New York Times, notes that two of Donald Trump's key partners in his Indian real estate developments are members of the BJP. That is Narendra Modi's political party. It is a political front for the RSS. The RSS, as we have spoken about in, among other shows, For the Record 795 and 889, is a Hindu nationalist slash fascist organization dating back to the 1930s and modeled after the German Nazi Party and Mussolini's black shirts. It was the RSS that murdered Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi favored mutuality and coexistence between Indian Hindus and Indian Muslims. That was anathema to the RSS. The RSS is hostile to Muslims. We have noted in the past that Pierre Omidyar of First Look Media, which became the journalistic voice of Glenn Greenwald and the whole team Snowden, helped to put Narendra Modi in power, just as he helped to put the OUNB heirs in power in Ukraine. Not only is Donald Trump's business developments in India networked with the BJP, but Tulsi Gabbard networks with the BJP as well. That Tulsi Gabbard also has been networking with Donald Trump to an extent and is viewed with great favor by Stephen Bannon and the and Team Trump, so to speak. ABC News, November 21st of 2016, Democratic Representative Tulsi Gabbard under serious consideration for Trump cabinet, talking about how she was interviewed by Donald Trump for a possible position in the Trump cabinet. McClatchy, D.C., of November 21st of 2016. Again, this is in the written description for the Record 941 by Alex Doherty. Donald Trump met with Bernie Sanders supporter Tulsi Gabbard to discuss Syria. This talks about the fact that Steve Bannon very much liked Tulsi Gabbard, and in the New York Times of October 14th of 2016, among Donald Trump's biggest fans, Hindu nationalists, this by Jeremy Peters, noting that Stephen K. Bannon was a big fan of Narendra Modi and followed his movements very closely and was supportive of the Hindu nationalist slash fascist stance of the BJP slash RSS. And Donald Trump and Stephen Bannon are not alone in this regard. From the Times of India, from September 29th of 2014, Tulsi Gabbard, U.S. Congresswoman, calls on Modi. And it talks about the fact that Gabbard is a big supporter of Modi. She also helped to plan Modi's U.S. visit and network with two leaders of the BJP. Again, Donald Trump's business affairs in India also network with, Trump is networked with members of the BJP in India in regard to his real estate developments. And from the Quartz blog, Q-U-A-R-T-Z, from March 2nd of 2016, by Manu Balachandran, Tulsi Gabbard, first Hindu in U.S. Congress on Modi Hinduism and linking Islam to terror, notes that not only was Tulsi Gabbard very supportive of the BJP because of its anti-Muslim stance, but that she also was networking with the RSS proper. Again, that is the Hindu nationalist slash fascist organization for which the BJP is a cat's paw. It basically was the RSS that assassinated Gandhi. Now, again, the text documenting what I have just summed up is in the written description for the show. We've spoken about it in past programs as well. Now, Tulsi Gabbard, as I have said, has been bruited about as the first Hindu in Congress. While that is, strictly speaking, true, she is not really a Hindu in the way that would generally be understood by most people. She is technically Hindu, but she actually is a devotee of an offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult. An interesting piece appeared in the Huffington Post of March 16th of 2015 by Rul, R-U-L, Kaneya, K-A-N-E-Y-A. Tulsi Gabbard still dogged by Krishna cult rumors. And this begins, 11 years ago, U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard, now a rising star in the Democratic Party, was a little-known state representative from a West Oahu district. It was her then-Republican father, Mike, who was in the political limelight. The elder Gabbard, known for his virulent anti-gay crusade in the 1990s, was challenging Democratic incumbent Ed Case in the race to represent Hawaii's 2nd Congressional District. So for a profile piece, a writer at Honolulu Magazine emailed him and asked about his family's ties to a guru named Chris Buffer, a.k.a. Jagad Guru Sidwaras Pamanda Parahamsa, I'm mispronouncing that, it's in the description, who leads an obscure offshoot of the Hare Krishna movement in Hawaii. But Tulsi Gabbard jumped in, "I smell a skunk," she emailed back. "It's clear to me that you're acting as a conduit for homosexual extremist supporters of Ed Case." The article then goes on to point out that Tulsi Gabbard has undergone some political evolution. She is no longer anti-gay, supports same-sex marriage. And the article references the Cult Education Institute's forum on Chris Buffer, and it tends to poo-poo much of the information on it because it is anonymous, and I think that is past the point fair. However, there is also a lot of useful information on there, as the article points out, skipping down. But Civil Beat, that is part of the, that's a function or a part of the Huffington Post. But Civil Beat was able to verify a number of the ties that link Butler, again, head of a Hare Krishna offshoot, to Gabbard's family and associates. Kainoa Penaroza, K-A-I-N-O-A-P-E-N-A-R-O-Z-A, who was appointed as Gabbard's Washington, D.C.-based chief of staff last month, despite his relative lack of political experience, is the son of Bill Penaroza, who was among a slate of 14 candidates running for a variety of offices in 1976 under an enigmatic political party called the Independents for Godly Government. The party's connections to Butler was revealed in a three-part investigative series by the Honolulu Advertiser's Washer, W-A-T-E-R, Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, in 1977. Penaroza 30 and his wife, Alana Lee Penaroza, now works as Gabbard's D.C. fundraiser, at one time lived in a Kailua property owned by Joseph Bismarck, a Singapore-based businessman whose company QI Group bought Healthies in 2007. The offshoot of the Hare Krishna movement, headed by Chris Butler, runs a number of health food stores. According to the Hawaii Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, Healthies owns Noni Connection LLC, which lists Kainoa as its director and secretary. Abraham Williams, Gabbard's 26-year-old fiancé, is a freelance cinematographer who also grew up in a family with strong ties to Butler. His mother, Anya Anthony, is listed as a registered agent of Wailana Productions, LLC, a company named after Butler's wife, Wailan, that runs www.wailana.com, which sells yoga instruction DVDs, clothing, and other accessories. Anthony, again, that is the mother of her fiancé, is now the manager of Gabbard's district office in Honolulu. And there are many other connections as well. Skipping down, Sunil Kamani, who accompanied Gabbard on her December trip to India, is listed in Wailana Productions' business registration records as its manager. And it talks about the links between Sunil Kamani and Gabbard, and in turn linking that to the Chris Butler organization. Kamani is also the vice president of the East West Yoga Foundation, a nonprofit registered in Arizona. And again, there is an extended body of information linking Tulsi Gabbard and the people around her as a congressperson and also relatives to the Chris Butler offshoot of the Hare Krishna movement. An interesting thing ends this article. It's interesting because the Huffington Post is actually run, of course, by Arianna Huffington, the ex-wife of right-wing Republican Congressman Michael Huffington. She divorced him. It turned out he was gay. She also has a background in cults. She was part, as Arianna Stephanopoulos, she was part of a cult run by a guy named John Roger. Civil Beat and Huffington Post had this interesting statement. Civil Beat found no evidence that Tulsi Gabbard is or ever was a Butler devotee, and we could find no record of her ever speaking publicly about it. Well, I don't think they looked too hard. The Cult Awareness Institute's page, or their body of information about the Chris Butler cult, is quite voluminous. However, there is, in fact, very firm documentation on her speaking publicly about her affiliation with Chris Butler. Very quickly, a couple of notes about the Hare Krishna movement. When Prabhupada, P-R-A-B-H-U-P-A-D-A, the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, died in 1977, and I will have an article about this in the written description. When he died, the cult basically fragmented in the sense of, rather than having a single successor, no less than 11 different gurus assumed the position of heads of various offshoots or branches of the Hare Krishna cult. Some of them have been engaged in some very insidious activities, gun running and murder. I remember in about 1980, there was a case when a guy named Hans Kari, a German, also known as Hansa Dutta. Swami was arrested for having a bunch of weapons, including automatic weapons, in the trunk of his car. I ran into a bunch of Hare Krishnas in a marketplace, and they were espousing, they were selling LP record albums out of the back of the van. They were all none of them were of Indian extraction. They had blonde hair and blue eyes. They weren't wearing the Hare Krishna robes, but they were espousing quasi-Nazi viewpoints. They said Hitler was an avatar. He didn't kill people. It was done by the British, etc. This dovetails with what we spoke about with Peter Lavenda as esoteric Nazism. There's also a show about, a for-the-record show about Savitri Devi. And in fact, certainly some of the branches of the Hare Krishna cult have, again, been engaged in some nefarious practices, including murder and gun running, and I will have an article about that in the written description for the show. A book about the Hare Krishna movement, The Post-Charismatic Fate of a Religious Transplant by Edwin Bryant and Maria Ekstrand, had a review on Amazon that sums up some of the interesting views of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami's views, or Prabhupada, Prabhupada. ISKCON founder A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami's views were even more bizarre than I expected. Rape victims asked for it. Blacks are inferior and should be enslaved. Aryans are the supreme race. Hitler was right when attacking the Jews, and the non-Aryan majority of the human race are useless eaters, no better than dogs. The preferred form of government is an absolutist monarchy. Racism is apparently an integral part of the ideal Vedic society, since Shudra, the designation of the worker caste, means black, which in turn literally refers to blacks, a category which also includes Dravidians from southern India. That actually sums up the views of Prabhupada. What we're going to do is to listen to the audio track, about 5 minutes in length, of Tulsi Gabbard talking about Prabhupada. And I wanted to sum that up to give you an idea of the reality of the guy she is talking about here. This is from one of the posts on the Cult Awareness Institute's long body of information about the Chris Butler organization.
Namaste, Jai Shri Krishna. When I was invited to join all of you on this most auspicious celebration, I was immediately overcome by feelings of both humility and great joy. I'm blessed and honored to have this opportunity, and I want to thank you from the core of my heart. Although my attempts to offer praise to my beloved grandfather spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, can be likened to a child offering a small torchlight to the sun, out of his kindness, Lord Krishna beckons me to do so for my own edification. Throughout my life, I, like so many of you, have been faced with stressful, challenging, or fearful situations. But in all these situations, I've had the great fortune of being able to find solace, inner peace, and spiritual happiness by taking shelter in the holy names of Krishna. Indeed, simply by uttering Jai Shri Krishna, my lips taste sweetness beyond compare, and my heart leaps for joy. But the fact is, if not for the compassion of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, I never would have achieved this supreme treasure of Krishna's holy names. Srila Rupa Goswami says, a person who is unable to bear another's distress is called compassionate. It was this compassion that drove Srila Prabhupada to attempt something so brave and so daring, to deliver the message of Lord Chaitanya and the holy name to all of mankind. We get a glimpse of the compassion that Srila Prabhupada felt for all of us in a poem which he wrote in honor of his spiritual master, His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. He wrote, "The jivas have reshackled themselves with the heavy chains of ignorance and delusion, and as they swim about in the vast ocean of material existence, in a frenzied attempt to reach the shore of peace, they perish. This lance of misery pierces my heart, as it similarly afflicted you, Srila Prabhupada, who suffered so upon seeing the suffering of the misguided humanity. Out of this compassionate desire to help us cross the ocean of material suffering, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami embarked upon a long and difficult voyage across the Indian and Atlantic oceans. He was already advanced in age and in relatively poor health, yet his compassion drove him to commence the journey anyway. While on this journey, he suffered 2 heart attacks, all the while taking shelter in his spiritual master and Lord Krishna. Those of us who are the spiritual children and grandchildren of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, would all be lost orphans were it not for His compassion and mercy. My Gurudev, Srila Siddhasarupananda Paramahamsa, has said that while we will never be able to repay the debt of gratitude that we all owe Srila Prabhupada, what we can do is be pleasing to Him by always taking shelter in the holy names of Krishna. By taking shelter in the names of Krishna, we too may become lovers of Krishna, whose lives are motivated by compassion and love for others. My dear friends, in this way, with the sweet names of Krishna always upon our lips and in our hearts, we will always be able to transmit the transcendental nature and glories of Srila Prabhupada's journey to the United States of America and the Western world. So on this historic and auspicious day, we should take this opportunity to beg for the blessing of Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, so that we too can taste the nectar of love for Krishna and be motivated by compassion to use our lives working for the spiritual and material well-being of others. Again, I thank you all for this opportunity. Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
That again, Tulsi Gabbard talking about Swami Prabhupada. Now, the piece in the Huffington Post, which was basically meant initially at least to be exculpatory of Tulsi Gabbard, says that there is no public record. Again, Civil Beat found no evidence that Tulsi Gabbard is or ever was a Butler devotee, and we could find no record of her ever speaking publicly about it. Well, I don't think they could have looked very hard, because in fact, in the excerpt you just heard, the audio track of the video that is embedded into the article, which will be linked in the description, she in fact said just that. Excerpting that very briefly, here is Tulsi Gabbard saying that her guru is Chris Butler, although she uses his Indian name.
My Gurudev, Srila Siddhasarupananda Paramahamsa.
So again, certainly Tulsi Gabbard has publicly stated that Chris Butler, a.k.a. Jagat Guru, is her personal guru. In the same post that is linked in the written description for the show, Chris Butler can be heard talking about his philosophy. And again, it is something that exemplifies how various forms of religion, in particular cult religion, can dovetail with fascism. He says basically, and this will, you can listen to it and watch it for yourself, that he is a servant of God in the spiritual realm, and so if you become his servant, then in the spiritual realm you are automatically a servant of God. And boy, that one is, as they say, loaded. More about the person that was the founder of the Hare Krishna movement, which again, fragmented, many branches of it may not be fascist in orientation, although some of them certainly are, about Swami Prabhupada. International Business Times of September 27th of 2013, Swami Prabhupada, founder of Hare Krishna movement and a virulent racist anti-Semite, by Palash Ghosh, P-A-L-A-S-H, G-H-O-S-H. This again from September 27th of 2013. Skipping down. For one thing, Prabhupada spewed vitriolic racial hatred toward black African people repeatedly and explicitly. Examples of his racial bigotry are numerous and frequently recorded in lectures and private conversations by his many devotees and disciples over the decades. Part of Prabhupada's hatred of blacks stemmed from his deep-seated Hindu beliefs that dark-skinned peoples represent the very bottom of the hierarchy of the human race, a direct reflection of India's ancient color-based caste system. For example, in an April 1968 letter to a senior disciple named, I'm not going to attempt the name, born an Italian Roman Catholic in Staten Island named Stephen Guarino, Prabhupada wrote, "Certainly we are not going to say these things about the Negro people publicly. We have no distinction between black or white or demon or demigod, but at the same time, so long as one is demon or demigod, we have to behave in the proper way," unquote. These words, which suggested that blacks should be kept at a distance, were uttered shortly after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. During a speak before a class in Los Angeles later that year, Prabhupada told a bizarre tale of how the apartment he was staying at in New York City had been burglarized and his typewriter and tape recorder stolen. "When I came back to the apartment, I saw the door was broken," Prabhupada said. "That building superintendent, he was a Negro. He had done it. I know that. This is a very common case here in America." In the conversation with devotees on the island of Mauritius from 1975, Prabhupada chastised the gross materialism of the West while simultaneously slurring black people. "It's all a nonsense civilization," he declared. "A first-class Rolls-Royce car, and who is sitting there? A third-class Negro. This is going on. You will find these things in Europe and America. This is going on. A first-class car and a third-class Negro." And skipping down, talking about, he talks about black people and how they are inferior at great length. He also, interestingly, has some interesting things to say about, quote, Aryans, unquote, and about Jews. And again, I'm attenuating this in the interests of time. Prabhupada apparently also deeply embraced the myth of the Aryan super race and linked the ancient peoples of India to Europe and the U.S. During a talk in Australia one year prior to his death, Prabhupada declared that, quote, "Aryans spread to Europe also, and the Americans, they also spread from Europe. So the intelligent class of human being, they belong to the Aryans, the Aryan family, just like Adolf Hitler claimed that he belonged to the Aryan family." The Swami also equated the Dravidians, that is, the dark-skinned original inhabitants of India who now predominate in the southern part of the country, with black Africans. He also bemoaned that the Dravidians, black people, mixed with the Aryans, white people, throughout Indian history, including in his native Bengal. And he was very, very disparaging of black people, not only in the U.S., but in India as well. Skipping down again. Prabhupada also had some choice words about the Jews. During another conversation with Ramasvara, Prabhupada alleged that Hitler killed the Jews in Germany because banks in the U.S. and Western Europe, allegedly controlled by Jews, were helping to finance Vladimir Lenin and the communist revolution in Russia and elsewhere. They, Jewish bankers, were financing against the interests of Germany, Prabhupada said. Otherwise, Hitler had no enmity against the Jews. The Jews have got money. They want to invest and get some profit. Their only interest is how to get money, not nationalism, not religion, nothing of the sort. And the article goes on to document the anti-Semitism of Prabhupada. It also notes that these were not comments that were made publicly for the most part, and that they would have generated what he a furor, F-U-R-O-R, had they been done. Again, Prabhupada died in 1977. He claimed that he was poisoned. Then the Hare Krishna cult was, he was succeeded as head of the cult by 11 different gurus. Some of them may not be involved in insidious activities at all, but some of them certainly are. And one has to wonder about Tulsi Gabbard being so exculpatory of someone like this. One also wonders if perhaps, and again I say perhaps, she might be a ringer, an infiltrator in the Democratic Party, and what role she may have had in either disclosing information to Craig Murray as the dissatisfied insider, unquote, or perhaps providing information that would have facilitated the hack into the DNC computers, or John Podesta's email, is a subject for speculation. We will go into this in our next program as well. However, this concludes For the Record 941, Who is Tulsi Gabbard? Part 1. This is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.